Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Scottish Watches podcast. Now, how do I introduce this guest? Possibly I should say that my relationship with this guest is so null and void, bearing in mind that I spend most of my time in overalls on a tractor.
Yeah.
And I come from a country where the men wear skirts as a national dress. Then my general need for fashion and manly advice is somewhat limited. But you, Ricky, you're the, you know, the milk tray man, always in black, which you seem to think is some sort of fashion sense. I don't really get it myself. It just looks like you're trying to mug everybody. You go into these ADs and they kind of look at you askance as soon as you walk in, the way you're dressed. But you came across our guest today through a particularly splendid, because obviously you introduced it to me and I watched it, a particularly splendid video on Rolex.
Yes.
So you reached out, and rather unbelievably, because this gentleman could be described, well, I imagine is described in the world of YouTube as a proper YouTuber.
Yes.
Unlike all us watch guys, whereby a big YouTube channel is maybe 370,000 subscribers, where half of them have been paid for by somebody else.
Yes.
This man actually has millions of subscribers. So why don't you introduce him for a change? Because until a few weeks ago, I had no idea. As I said, I have no relationship with fashion whatsoever.
This is true.
So I had no idea who this guy was.
Well, this is a gentleman who I've been following on YouTube for a number of years. He runs a channel called Real Men Real Style. He also runs an international conference in America along with other influencers and YouTube celebrities that are at the top of their game when it comes to fashion, styling, accessories. And that obviously includes watches. And it's not just super high roller stuff, it's not all Pateks, it's not Gribble Forces and Rolex, it's everything across the board from fashion right the way through. So I'd like to introduce our guest, Antonio. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for coming on.
So Antonio, quick question, quick fire question. Crocs, yes or no?
Yes, actually. It depends on the situation. If you're rafting, Crocs have a very unique property in that they float on top of water. So if you're going to be getting in and out and you want your feet to be able to stay, you know, dry, or you want to be able them to dry quickly, and you want a shoe that if you were to lose it, you would be able to find it because it would float up to the top, then yeah, why not?
Okay, then kilts, yes. Have you ever worn a kilt? Kilts, yes.
I've never worn a kilt. I have good friends that have actually gone to Scotland, gotten married, and they actually had all, you know, it was all kilt. Americans, since we don't seem to have much heritage or much history here, we always look to the world for our history. And it is something I totally respect all the different clans, the colors, the actual functionality of, hey, you know, instead of, I mean, I've got to unzip the zipper, all that kind of stuff. I mean, kilt, you just pull the thing up, you take care of business.
Absolutely. And sometimes you only need to pull up, you don't need to pull anything down either.
Yeah,
depending
true.
On whether you go command, the full commando, or full smokeless or not. So I think that's clearly something that's missing from your channel is a review of kilts.
You know,
so there we go. That is our contribution to you today. You're going to contribute all this watch stuff. We're contributing to you. We will volunteer. We will do a review of kilts for your channel.
I would love to have it. You know, it's like, it's one of those things I'm always looking for subject experts that can help me talk about something with authority. I mean, haggis, I'm still trying to find someone, you know, that is going to come in and show us how to properly, you know, prepare and eat, you know, haggis there. So
the key thing with haggis is between January and June, you're only allowed to shoot the ones that run leftwise, so clockwise around the mountain.
Okay.
And between July and the end, you're allowed to shoot the ones that run anti-clockwise, because the two legs on one side of a haggis are shorter than the other. And depending on how they breed, they run round in circles on mountains. So that's the important thing. You've got to make sure you shoot the right kind of haggis at the right time of year. But, you know, it's just one of the rules.
Yeah, as an American, I'll believe that.
Yeah. Rick, you've just had your speaking privileges withdrawn completely now. So let the adults speak, okay?
Okay. I'm taking all this extra insulin to deal with all the extra sugar that I'm eating.
I know.
But it is having somewhat of a caffeinated type effect.
Good. Well, sit down and shut up. Let the adults speak.
Okay.
So do you want to give the listeners a bit of a sort of primer about yourself and how you came to be on YouTube and running this very successful channel? Now, from what I believe, and seen your videos. You've got a military background and things kind of started from there.
Yeah, yeah. I grew up in conservative West Texas, but my family was all from California. So I would, you know, grew up in the Southwest United States. And it was something that seeing the cowboy and being around guys that we, you know, I owned horses, it was just something that the style was always there. And I do believe that every region, every area has style. And for me, style was always very practical. Again, I didn't think much of it. I joined the Marine Corps, spent time as a Marine officer, but you start to pick up, wow, actually, we've got great looking uniforms. When you put on that uniform, you feel like a different person. You're treated like a different person. And then I went to business school afterwards, and all of a sudden I see it again, that when you wear a proper fitting suit, people treat you differently. They act differently. I mean, you act differently. And my first business that I started out of business school was a custom clothier online. Didn't actually work out. Ran it for a few years, but ended up running it into, it just ran, just couldn't make a go of it. But what we were pretty good at was creating content. And I realized that so many guys out there, they want to functionally understand style. They don't care about fashion or runways. What they care about, though, is looking good so that they can go out there and they can get the girl. They can make more money. They can be successful. And guys want respect. Guys, they put in a lot of men, you know, they're confused also with this world we live in. They're getting all these politically correct messages here. They're being told to do this. I try to bring logic and I try to bring practicality to fashion so that a guy can simply put his best foot forward without having to think a whole lot about it. And he's able to go out there and just use it as a tool to get what he wants out of life.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what your channel is all about, along with the other guys that I mentioned as well. So how did you end up deciding to give the YouTube thing a go and put yourself in front of the camera? How did that all start?
You know, I'd already written a couple hundred articles. I was writing with a friend of mine, Brett McKay, over at The Art of Manliness. I also had my own blog over at A Tailored Suit, and I saw the power of putting out content. Now, this is 2007, 2008, 2009. Content marketing is relatively new, and we were really doing well in terms of these little articles, you know, getting hundreds of thousands of views. But I saw on YouTube that you could actually see the numbers of how many views people were getting versus the articles. No one ever saw that this article got a million views. And I have to admit that I thought that, well, you know, I'm not a very good typer. I'm not a great writer, but and I already have all this knowledge in my head and I don't mind speaking and talking. So I got in front of a camera and I started putting up the stuff. There was also another gentleman already doing this. His name was Aaron Marino. He's now business partner, and we've got a couple companies together. But at the time, I was a little bit, you know, envious of him. I was a little bit, you know, I'm smarter than this guy. He doesn't know jack about suits or about it. And so it was a little bit, my wife told me, hey, you know, quit, shut up, you know, and go out there and make it happen. So that's exactly what we did is in the mornings, I would just film videos. Really, they weren't, my wife edited my first 200 videos and we just threw them up on YouTube. And the information, they didn't have great images, didn't have great graphics. Again, this is 2012, 2013. There was less competition in our space. Really, there was no competition for what we were doing. We were going into such detail about what we talked about, and we knew it so well that we were able to spearhead, really get our niche and own that spot right there on YouTube. And then from there, I realized we started to have a following and we started investing more in proper editing and studios and stuff. My wife stepped out. I started to hire a team and that's where we're at now. I've got 15 people that work for me and we've got our blog. We have our YouTube channel. We've got a social media presence. We have a conference. We have a media company. And of course, we've still got Real Men, Real Style.
Your military career, did they issue you with a military watch?
They did not. You know, even when I went through flight school, they don't issue you a watch. Scandal. They do issue you sunglasses, jackets, and flight suits and everything else. So, you know, watches, yeah, were not something that we were handed out. Most guys that I saw when I, you know, again, I wasn't deep into watches, but most people just had G-Shocks.
Yes, it's the go-to, just do anything, everywhere, under any circumstances, type watch, certainly very popular amongst the pilots that I know. While they all like to kid on that they all wear Breitlings, the vast majority of them are just wearing G-Shocks, because it's an entirely practical proposition.
Yeah.
But there we go. Cool. So another question for you on the style sense. What's your favorite tie knot? I'm a full Windsor man myself. What about you?
So my favorite what? Tie knot? My favorite tie knot. A four in hand. And it's simply because that's the first knot I learned how to tie. You know, it goes back. The history on the four in hand was when carriage drivers, it came from how they would actually have four horses in front of them and how they would tie the straps they were using to control the horses. And, you know, it works for, I don't have a large head. I'm not a big man. If I was a larger man, maybe perhaps I would go with the half Windsor. But yeah, four in hand.
Cool. No, I have experience of carriage driving myself, so I know the four in hand well. You said you had a background in horses when you were in West Texas.
That's true.
Is that something you still keep going today?
No, not as much.
Horses wherever you are? Are you a city boy now?
Yeah, I wouldn't say. I still live in a town. I live in a small town. All my neighbors are farmers and hunters and Green Bay Packer fans, which is our local football team here.
And, is that right? Oh,
yeah. So, I mean, I do not. I live 4.5 hours from Chicago. That's probably, three hours from Minneapolis. So those are the two major cities that I'm between. But no, I would not say I'm a city guy, which is always, I find people find it very interesting that I have this fashion YouTube channel in a town of just over 1,000 people.
So how do you find you keep yourself up to date with trends, or do you find yourself in what you're doing on the channel being a bit more scientific in terms of style, so actually you're not that worried about being in a city seeing, you know, what the very latest thing is?
Yeah, I don't follow trends very closely. It's something that I have the access to the internet to be able to, you know, track that stuff if I want. But yeah, I would say I'm definitely much more timeless, and I focus in on, I always try to tell a guy that you could spend, like we talked about, you know, a pilot, he would probably eventually buy a Breitling just because he knows the history. He loves the brand. He loves everything about it. From a practical, you know, practicality, he's going to go with two G-Shocks probably though. One that he keeps as a spare, one that he wears every day just because he's not going to worry if it gets caught, if it gets ripped off, if it gets stolen. Those are the, you know, that. And I love being able to talk to guys about timeless style. And that's what one of the reasons I love watches. The right watch can be timeless. It's something that can be passed on as an heirloom piece. And I, not necessarily you would pass on your shoes or a sports jacket as an heirloom piece, but I do like the fact that a guy can spend quite a bit more on the right pair of shoes that are actually maybe Goodyear welted or Blake stitched, are made with a really nice leather, because he knows that they're going to stay in style for the next 20 to 30 years at least. And therefore he can spend five times what he would on a pair of versus glued shoes. And by spending that extra money, he's got something that if he takes care of it, will last him 20 to 30 years. And like I said, never go out of style.
Well, I mean, while it may come across that I'm a complete fashion Luddite, I do actually have an extensive collection of handmade shoes. So there you go. That's my one, that and watches is my one foible to style and fashion, is you can't beat a pair of shoes that will last you a lifetime. Which does lead me to an interesting question of a film which Ricky is a big fan of, which also has some watch content, which maybe you can explain, because we are used to on this show having some pretty obscure film references, which I very often don't get because I'm kind of an innocent person. But Kingsman, explain why Kingsman is wrong when it goes Oxford's not brogues.
Oh yeah, that was a video we just put out, and simply, you know, they're comparing apples to oranges here. So you know, that's really the point. I just felt that they should have maybe done a better job maybe of comparing them to derbies or to bluchers. It just wasn't a straight up comparison. So it's not that, and that was, again, you know, the titles with what we put on YouTube, we want to grab attention. But
absolutely,
yes, it would have been I think the way that they said it, it sounds right. And I'm not sure if you go back and you read the screenplay, or you read, maybe it even goes back to comics or the books, you know, where they actually got that line from. But yeah, they were comparing apples to oranges. So it didn't really make sense, because yeah, I could go into all the detail, but I'll just say, just Google it. And I spend 10 minutes explaining those details.
We will link it in the show notes, as I say, but we recently interviewed, which one did we interview? I can never tell them
Nick
apart,
English,
Giles or
Raymond.
Nick. It was Nick English. It was the good brother, not the evil twin. So we recently interviewed Nick English, who supplied the watches for the original film, not the second film, but for the first one. It's a company called Bremont. Have you come across Bremont?
Yes. Yep.
So they're quite into. He's a fashionable, stylish chap. As Giles and Nick English, they are indeed. They're both quite dapper.
Indeed,
I think would be the appropriate expression. So Ricky, why don't you take us through the usual risk check scenario?
Okay, I got a chance to speak again. That's really kind of you. Thank you
very much. Yeah, well, I thought, listen, I have been cramming hard on as much style information I've got. That's me done now.
Okay,
you're spent. All the stuff, I'm spent. I am done and dusted. You'll have no more from me.
Perfect. Okay, well, what we do
in your dreams.
On most watch shows, our own included, is we do a customary wristwatch check. So what are you wearing today on the wrist?
I have my Rolex Yachtmaster, and this one is... I like to think it's got a chocolate brown dial right there. And what else about it? Yeah, I picked this one up probably just over two years ago. This one commemorates my first $1 million year with RealmenRealStyle.com. That was the first year that website surpassed the $1 million mark. And I went out with my good friend Aaron Marino, and he took me to a watch shop in Atlanta, and I saw the watch, absolutely loved it, and decided to splurge, and that was the first Rolex I've ever bought. Now I've got four of them, along with quite a few other watches, but yeah, that's what I'm wearing today.
Sounds good. And Rick?
I am back to wearing the Panerai. Can't be beaten. There is no substitute. I've worn all these other watches recently, which have all been good. I still like the Horage watch and that Formex, which I've tried on the alternative rubber strap and leather strap. Actually really good, really changes the watch. But for today, I am back to wearing the Panerai, which is my going steady watch.
And what size wrist do you have?
I've never actually measured it. I would say it's probably seven and a half, seven and three quarters, maybe. It's fine. I've always worn large watches. So I'm quite happy with the Panerai. I've not got chicken wrists.
No.
But they're not massive. They're not like John Cena, where they're having to produce extra long straps in order for him to fit the watch for whatever movie he's in this week.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think it's about 7.5, 7.75.
Good stuff. And I'm on Team Rolex today. I'm wearing the original Batman on the Oyster, which is my go-to.
The vintage one.
The vintage, yes. The no longer produced Rolex BLNR, which I've had for, I think it's, well, it'll be 3 years shortly. And it's like you with the Panerai. It's my go-to piece. It's the one that I enjoy wearing the most. It's comfortable. And it's the piece I would probably keep if everything hit the wall and I decided I had to sell everything and move forward. So there we go.
I should now add that we now have extra sound effects. I don't think we've said it on this podcast already, but I'm having to record this from my car for various technical reasons. And it's now started raining. So you now have the pitter-patter. Just sounds like it'll just sound like I've joined the girls at 10 and 2 in their trailer park in Nashville.
Yeah.
And that it's just that it suddenly started to rain in Nashville. So, yeah, apologies if you're now getting Scottish sound effects in the background. It's raining.
Right, well, back to our guest. Do you want to give us a run through then of how you got involved with watches as part of everything you do? Was it something that you had when you were younger, or like you say, when you were in the military and you were using, you know, the go-to piece that you don't care if it gets damaged, it's a workhorse G-Shock? How did things come about?
You know, there was a particular Casio that I was in love with when I was probably in sixth or seventh grade. I would go to Walmart and I would see it, and it was just a beautiful watch. What I loved about it is it had this world time and temperature feature. At the time, I had no idea how could they know what the temperature is around the world. And this is back in the late 80s. So, you know, it wasn't like we all knew that we had like global satellite systems and things like that. And it wasn't connected. It was actually, it just simply took the yearly averages in Moscow. But I wanted to travel. I had grown up in this trailer park in West Texas. And to me, to be able to leave West Texas and travel and see the world was just something I really wanted to do. And this watch, just knowing the temperature in these other parts of the world, I just thought it was a good looking watch. I saved up for probably about 2 years to buy this watch. And I loved it. And every time I wore it, I felt great. You know, so that was probably my first, and I don't have the original one. I now have two that I've bought, which off of eBay that are pretty much the same watch. Uh-huh. Although I wasn't sure, you know, what exact model I had. So I bought both models. But, you know, that was probably my first intro. Then I really didn't get much into watches after. I lost it at some point in high school when watches for me became less important. Girls became much more important in sports. And all of a sudden, went off to college. Didn't think about watches probably for 4 years. Actually just did a lot of drinking and partying. Had a good time. Rested a couple times. All that fun stuff. Then I get into the Marine Corps. And of course, you need a watch. So it was something I don't even remember which particular G-Shocks. And I don't even think I always went with a G-Shock. I just simply went with an inexpensive, functional watch. I kept two watches on me at all times. One that I wore and then one in usually my bag or on my person, just in case the other one. Because anytime you're in giving an op order, you've always got to sync. Everyone's giving, you know, each other, you know, the operations officer gives the exact time. We all sync our watches. Boom. That happens. And so that's where I wore it, and I had it simply for practical reasons. But, you know, being I was in the flight program for a while, looking around, I saw the practicality of watches. I had a number of friends that were into them. I didn't take too much notice. And then fast forward to, you know, probably, I don't know, 8 years later, I'm already pretty much into my style channel. And I have a number of people commenting that I don't wear a watch. And how can you be a style guy and not be into watches? And, you know, I just wasn't used to wearing a watch. It wasn't something I thought about. And then all of a sudden I realized, you know, I should get into this. And then funny enough, we had probably, I think, so many watch guys out there, they hate on these fashion watches. But if it wasn't for the fashion watches, I would not have started to wear a watch again. And I had a company, I think it was either the Fifth Watches, I think it was them. They sent me a watch and I recognized that this is not, an amazing high quality watch, but it is something that when you start to wear a watch again, even if it's, you know, relatively cheap, inexpensive watch, it really changes you, I think, as the wearer. And I started actually to notice that I was looking at my watch instead of my phone. I enjoyed having a watch. But then I realized I wanted something different. I think this one had about a 43 diameter, and I wanted something more. I definitely knew I wanted something more like 40 or 39 because of the size of my wrist. I have relatively small wrists. I felt the proportions were off on this watch. And I also then started looking at all the different options out there, and you start seeing, oh, wow, that's a nice watch there. That's a nice watch there. I have now gravitated definitely towards dive watches. And that's probably most of my collection is dive watches. You know, it's something, flight watches are cool. I've even got a background with, you know, having flown, T-34s in the Marine Corps and stuff like that. But it's just something that, dive watches for me are where it's at. And that's kind of where I'm at the state of my collection. More than probably half of it is a variation of different dive watches and having fun with it.
Good.
No. And so what was your journey? Most people we speak to, and I think probably myself and Ricky as well, to a certain extent, start on the journey of finding something we like, and then you kind of investigate it a bit, and then the world of Rolex opens up to you and you become quite obsessed with that, and then you kind of not graduate but see that there's even more things beyond Rolex and start getting into other brands. Where else have you gone in your watch collecting journey? Have you gone to other specific brands that you've bought one or two watches in, or is it specific design features within dive watches that have attracted you, or do you like something that's a bit funky or a bit different, a bit off the beaten track?
You know what? I haven't pulled the trigger on the Hamilton. I think it's Jazzmaster. It's an oval shape, huge watch.
Oh, right. Yes.
And, you know, I see things like that and I'm just like, wow, like I love the way it looks, but what I actually wear, and I have to admit, like I've purchased three Hamiltons in the last 3 years and returned them all simply because, right? You know, I just find that brand is not like the aesthetic and the cut just doesn't really work for me. On the other hand, Tudor, I just did not expect to love my Black Bay 58 as much as I do. It's probably, you know, it definitely is in my three like watches that, again, you talk about, okay, if I gave up all my watches, like what three would I keep? You know, that one is right in there. Despite, I mean, it's a pricey watch. It's not, you know, cheap, but then again, it's not also, you know, super expensive. It's not, you know, 100,000 or 40,000. I did buy a Rolex relatively early. And I think that freed me up to all of a sudden, I no longer was, I got that status part, I think, out of it. Like you're like, oh, well, I need to get a Rolex when you don't have one. And then I had one. And then you realize, okay, like I want to look at a wide variety of other ones. So I've picked up a number of dive watches, even Rolex imitation watches, just because I'm curious as to if I were to wear a L'Oreal for, for an extended time. Would I really notice the difference between the Lorio and my Submariner? And the answer is I do, but it's more just simply because I know it. The watches are eerily very similar, unless you're an expert. I think I could show it. I want to make a video in which I just compare the two and ask them which one is the more expensive watch. And I bet that more than half of people would probably get it wrong. So now it's more out of curiosity. I have a large collection of digital watches, the different G-Shocks, large number of Casios. I've got a couple Ironmans. But yeah, just G-Shock is kind of something I've always had fun with. And it was nice just to go out there and get what I wanted. As someone that talks about this professionally, I have a huge advantage, I think, over the average collector, in that for me, it's business. So I look at this as I can spend money from my company, and I keep these controlled by my company. So I just kind of borrow them from my company when I wear them.
Is this just an excuse to buy more watches?
Yes. That's what I tell my wife.
Is this just so that you can say to you, I was going to say, this is just so as you can tell your wife it's a business expense, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yes. I think we've spoken to a few folk in the watch world who use the same strategy. So do you roll that out to other things? So you're saying, I think you said, I don't know if you've said it on the recording, but beforehand you had a collection of about 80 or so watches. Do you also have like an enormous number of shoes and suits and ties?
Yes.
And shirts and all sorts of things?
Yeah, close to 100 pairs of shoes, which most of those are actually sent to me at no cost because we talk about them. But there are numerous ones, of course, that, you know, I've purchased myself. I also probably have about 200 fragrances. So going through, like, that's probably, like, watches, I would say last year was my number one obsession with, yeah, I'd say up to last year. This year, 2019, has been the year of fragrances. And literally, I purposely shower quickly in the morning and also early in the afternoon so that I can just apply a different fragrance. That's how obsessed I've become with this stuff. He wears one in the morning, he changes at lunchtime, and then he puts on another one for evening. It's simply, you start getting this deep into it and you're wanting to understand like how
there is counseling available for that. I'm sure there probably is medical assistance that you can seek for needing to shower twice a day so as you can apply a different aftershave.
That's for people that go to the gym. People like us that go to the gym need to shower more than once a day.
Yeah, okay.
Well, see, that's its own type of research, though, where you put on the fragrance and you go to the gym and you see how it deals with temperature changes and sweat.
There you go. Well, I'm going to ask you a question down that rabbit hole then. What would you say are your top three or top five fragrances of the year? Because I saw you did an honest review of Jeremy's Office, which was quite good. But what other ones? What was your top three then?
I'd say Tom Ford's Tobacco Vanilla is definitely in my top three. We've also got Dior Fahrenheit is right up there. And Zahara Pour Homme, along with Jeremy's, I've just gone to four, but both Zaharoff and Jeremy are very emotional connections. So I find that with fragrances and even with watches, there's not logic that's applied to a lot of this. People become fascinated and we're drawn to things because of the human element of us being emotional beings that tie some type of relationship or story to it. So because I've seen Jeremy and I've talked to him and I went out to Germany and spent time with him, his mother, his brother. I've met up with his brother in New York. I've seen, they come out to my conference, you know, multiple years in a row. And me and Jeremy, you know, I'm part of his story. Whenever he needed, you know, he was starting his Patreon, like we're there to support him because I want to see this creator do something that no other creator has done. So to smell his fragrance, And what's interesting, I think this is with a lot of watches, is that people will hate on certain brands, but really when it comes down to it, it's a decent watch. You may say, well, it's not decent when compared to Rolex, but yet the average person, 99% of humanity, would look at like one of those fashion watches and think, that's a good looking watch. It's not, I mean, what's the issue here? They don't see what we see. And when I've looked at these fragrances, over 100 in just this last year, I find that 90% of them, 95% of them are really good. And there's only that 5%, which I would not wear. I just don't like. But I still realize that there's an art to, though, that 5% even, that I think, like, some of these fragrances, one of them smells like piss. I mean, that is part, that's part of.
That's the one Rick wears.
That's what I thought. You know, I'm like, well, but then you understand that, well, you know, there are certain people that a little bit of that in a fragrance, for some reason, they like it. And I, you know, I'm not here to judge. I'm just simply here to point out that that there's history with this. And some of these fragrances have been around for like over 100 years. I got one that's been, you know, the same formulation since 1934. And it's been like, it's a good fragrance. And you realize like, wow, this is, and similar to watches, you know, it's, all the fragrance world has issue with like reformulations and all this other stuff. And you can't necessarily see it. You experience it. But yeah, both of them, I look at watch collecting, fragrance collecting, both of them are arts and sciences. And it's that mix which allows for the debate and the, you know, the energy and for all these channels, I guess, to exist.
Was that Creed you were speaking about, or was that a different one that had been sort of the same formulation for nearly 100 years?
No, it was, it's actually, I think it's a French house. Creed's good. Creed Aventus, I own that one. It's probably in my top 15, probably top 10 fragrances. I tried, but I find that it's one of those things that like, if you get a watch and you know that the value of this watch is $100,000, it's hard for you to not look at this watch as a $100,000 watch. And I think I tried Creed relatively early and I knew that this was a pricey, expensive fragrance. And so I think I gave it, there was like a bit of a placebo, I don't know if it's the placebo effect, but
halo
it's this
effect.
Belief, halo effect, you're good. Yeah, and Thorndike talked about that back in the 1920s, that like anytime other people have told us it's great, we notice it has a high price, we just can't help but give association with it of that high value.
Yeah.
And I find that this is true for watches. This is true for, it's hard to, without it being a true blind test, to really be able to tell if something's good or not. Most things are, you know, we come in with preconceived notions in there. And I did the same thing with Creed. I simply believed, all the hype going in when I tried it years ago. And for that reason, it cannot get out of my top, probably 10 to 15 top fragrances.
No, it's one of my favorite. And it's one of the ones that does, I know in the channels and when you watch YouTubers talking about fragrances, people ask about different ones. This is one that I do get asked, especially when I'm at parties or events, people do say, what is that? And it's a split between male and female. So
yeah,
it's in my top five. It was interesting you mentioned Fahrenheit as well, because that's a very old fragrance. That's what, 25,
I've
30
got that
years?
One. That's how old it is.
There you go. It's very old.
And
it's
I know what that one
it's,
is.
It's one of my favourites as well. So that's a good recommendation. So you run this conference every year, and I'm led to believe that the conference is coming to a close because you've got other interests. You want to tell us about the event and why it is you're moving on?
Yeah, you know, it's like anything. I mean, if you have a party at your house, eventually, you know, it's like, hey, like I want to go to sleep and I'm kicking everyone out of the house. It's been a good party, but we accomplished what we wanted to, which was to bring the community together. I've seen a lot of other communities where there's a lot of hate. There's a lot of inner bickering. A lot of where, to me, it's just people don't really know each other. If you know somebody and you have a deep respect for them, I think as men, especially, we're very, when we fight, men, oftentimes we use physical. I mean, we're physical when we fight, or we're not afraid to like, hey, talk to each other straight to the face. You know, they are, you know, I'm a married man and I do know that one of the issues I have is like women just, they engage with the other human beings a bit differently. And I didn't want my community to ever be like one that, I thought it would be a great opportunity to bring everybody together and to get to know them, so that I'm a big believer that you bring everyone together and we can all lift each other up and we can rise. And a business for me did form out of a Menfluential. It was initially called StyleCon. Then we created the Menfluential Media, and then we renamed the conference Menfluential because Menfluential Media does so much better than all of my other businesses. And that's basically a media company where we've got about 30 to 40 influencers under basically, we don't even have them in contract, but we've got such great relationships with over 200 brands that we're able to give influencers deals that it's a win-win for both parties because we're influencers. We also own brands. My partner, Aaron, he owns a skincare company. He owns a hair care company. I now own a grooming company. You know, so it's something I've owned a custom clothier. So we would always say, well, we understand that influencers want this, brands want this. And how about we just be fair in the negotiation and we make things happen? And that business has just done really well. But yeah, this is the last year we're going to run it. The idea is to get, you know, 500 guys together in a space, have a great time. It's more of a party than a conference. I call it a conference because I got to be able to ride it off. But it's something that, yeah, I mean, I Being in college,
that's
having
the rules.
A great time.
Play to the rules.
I wanted to be able to get my friends together. Now, it's not a party in the sense of, you know, we're not bringing in, entertainment, that's going to be dancing up on tables or anything like that. It's more of a type of party that, hey, we do have an open bar. We make it fun. We charge, a minimal price for what we provide. We provide the meals, but we also keep it very guy-focused because guys, we bring in food trucks. We realize, hey, like people just want good food. They don't necessarily want it all catered. Yeah, most of us are dressed nice, but there are guys that show up in t-shirt and jeans. We have no issue with that. It's like, hey, it depends on you and your brand. And it's really been an excuse for me to bring all of my friends who I just didn't have the time to go to various conferences around the world. I just bring them into one place. And we've done this and we accomplished what we wanted to. And now, yeah, moving on to other things. I think Aaron and I both have so many companies that we're running that we realized this needs, if it were to continue, to have somebody full-time dedicated to it, and neither of us could make that commitment. That being said, we will still do meetups. So we both realized, hey, we've got audiences. Why not do a meetup in London? Why not do a meetup in New York? Why not do a meetup in LA? And we get the benefit of simply seeing our friends and hanging out with people without all the work of having to arrange speakers, deal with hotels, make sure that food and the logistics and everything is dealt with.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. That answers that perfectly. So you mentioned London. You didn't say about Scotland.
He's got to come and do the kilt video.
You're not coming to Scotland. You're going to London, yeah. But you're not coming to Scotland.
Well, we need to get us a few hundred people that will show up and party. And, that although I hear that's not too difficult up there.
It's not too difficult.
We invented that, I believe.
Can we guarantee the weather's going to be 75 degrees, sunny and just beautiful?
We have our limitations.
Yeah, we now have virtual reality headsets as a solution to that.
Yeah,
this thing called indoors. Is this other thing we invented indoors? That was the other thing we invented.
That's why we're good at snooker.
As well as television and radio, we invented the indoors.
And penicillin.
And penicillin to deal with all the after effects of said partying. Mm-hmm. Just a quick question to go back to the fact that you've got this vast collection of watches and other fashion essentials. Does this mean you have never been brave enough to say to your wife, why do you need that other handbag?
No, my wife actually isn't into clothing too much. So, she's actually a very frugal Ukrainian. She has,
oh, right, okay.
She keeps, and my wardrobe, it's funny, I keep everything's business wardrobe. So it's kept here and she doesn't see it day to day. My closet space at the house is relatively small. I live in an old Victorian home that doesn't really have closets. So everything has to be kept in a very minimalist wardrobe at the house. In fact, I always laugh if people were to see me, I'm usually very, I have a uniform. I usually wear either jeans or flannel trousers with boots, with a navy shirt, with a belt, and keep it, that works for me actually for most of the seasons here in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Wisconsin, that's cheese country, isn't it?
Cheese, bacon, sausage, beer. Yep, that's pretty much.
Yeah.
Most people here, they've got.
Pretty much like Scotland.
Yeah, they got a German heritage.
Let's bring it back to watches a little bit as well. If you to lay them out, what have you got in the collection at the moment of Rolex?
So the Rolex is the two that I really love is going to be the Yachtmaster that I wear frequently. I also, the Explorer was one that I probably went months with. That was the only watch I was wearing. I just love the Rolex Explorer, just the simplicity of the watch, the size of it, the 39. It's just a great looking watch. I love the history behind it. I know, Sir Edmund Hillary didn't take it up to the top, but the year after they commemorated. I just like everything about that watch, and it's a clean design. After that, I do have a Datejust 41, and that it's got the blue dial. And that one, I'm actually going to probably, I find I don't wear it very often. And I was warned, by some other watch collectors that once you start getting too many watches, you find that you've just got ones that I haven't worn that thing for a year, or I haven't worn that thing for 6 months. I only wear it for special occasions. I also bought a Sub No Date last year. That one was interesting. It was more of just an opportunity buy. I reached out to a friend that, has a jewelry shop, and he had it in stock, just got it. And he had a wait list, but he moved me up to the front just because we were talking, and I bought it. I mean, it was literally, I could have bought it on Joma Shop for $10,000, and he sold it for me, for $7,500, right there. So I could have actually flipped it and sold it, but I bought, again, this is where you fall into the trap of, well, I don't really need the watch, but I bought it and I've used it in multiple videos. So in a sense, it's already, you know, paying for itself with the content we're able to put out there with it. And it gave me an appreciation for this timeless classic watch. But would it be one that, and I enjoy wearing the watch, and I'm able now to compare it to other, you know, it's one of those dive watches. I think that, especially with the no date there, to me, it's just like a very nice, pure dive watch. But when it comes down to it, is it going to be something that will survive the cuts if I whittle down my collection? I'm not sure.
And apart from Rolex, which other brands have you got? I know about the G-Shocks and the Casios.
I try to pick up a number of obscure, I wish I need to go grab my, I know we're right in the middle of it, can't go grab my collection. You know, one that I just got into the other day and I went out to Mauritius with Yema. I don't know if you're familiar with French company.
Oh yeah, yep. Yeah, they're coming back.
Yep.
And I got to spend time with the owner of the company and his team. We actually went out to Mauritius. So I've got their Superman Heritage Bronze in both 39 and 41. And it's just a great looking watch. And I've really enjoyed the Yema.
Yeah, that is a company that this year it started to spike again, the interest levels in it.
I think they finally woke up to the fact that they need to market and advertise outside of France.
It does help, yeah. And bringing it back to you once again, just as we sort of tail off, do you want to explain to the listeners just a little bit more about your channel and the different areas that you cover? We've mentioned fragrances, we've mentioned suits, knots, and watches. What else do you guys cater to?
You know, we cover anything I think that a man needs to dress better. So we talk about business communication. I talk about eye contact. I talk about body language. We get into grooming. But I think what separates me from all the other channels out there is I have a background as an evolutionary biologist when I was in college, and that's what I studied. And for me, I always want to bring in the science. I always want to bring in, well, is this backed up by any study? Now, it's not true science what I'm talking about. It's more, I would say, pseudoscience, which makes it sound bad. But a true scientist is never going to go out there and make a big declaration. Scientists see the world and they measure things in very narrow silo. And it is something that I try to take more of I infer from a certain study. If it says this, you can, we're making an assumption here. But I am going to expand this out. That's a bit dangerous if a scientist was to do it. But the thing is, I'm not a scientist. You know, I didn't follow that path. I'm more of a, you know, online, I create content, I try to raise awareness, and I always encourage people to go back and to read the studies. Most people aren't going to do that though, but I do make them all available on my website. So
yeah. And how have you seen things over the last, say, couple of years on YouTube and online? How have you seen things change? Because we've seen the rise of these big, like you've mentioned Alpha M numerous times, they're a good friend of yours. How have you seen all this grow? Has it been steady or has it just kind of shot up? Is it what you expected it to be like, or have you been caught unawares by it like most people?
No, this has been kind of what I've expected, but it continues to grow. This is not going to slow down. I think change is going to be inevitable. There's going to be a new platform that should pop up, I think, relatively, you know, in the next few years that may surpass. I mean, MySpace, people believed was, you know, the biggest platform, then Facebook comes in. Google, everyone thought was like the go-to, and then Facebook comes in. Amazon now is, I think, the largest company in the world. Apple, you know, these companies are still fighting, but there's going to be disruption. And I'm excited to see what happens. I do think that we're going to get back to, and the importance, why I think the live events are key, is really, there nothing replaces yet real human interaction and the real relationships that happen when people meet.
No, I agree with that. And over here, well, in America, obviously, it started, there's a group called Red Bar, and they organise meetups for watch enthusiasts. You've probably heard of them. And that's something that's come across to the UK, and we are quite heavily involved with here in Scotland. And it's great talking to people. It's great liking pictures on Instagram. But meeting up with them, sharing experiences and getting that human-to-human conversation and picking up on the visual cues when you're chatting to someone instead of over the phone or online, it's irreplaceable. And hopefully next year we've been talking about putting a show on ourselves to do with watches and things of that sort of ilk. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to get you on the show. Introduce you to our listenership, and hopefully, I mean, I've learned a lot from you and the guys we've mentioned over the past few years, and hopefully our listeners can pick up a few things as well. So can you tell listeners where to go to find out more about Real Men Real Style?
Yeah, just simply type it into Google. Just type in Real Men Real Style or Antonio Centeno. We'll pop up. We've got thousands and thousands of articles, videos. And if anyone wants to reach out to me, I've got a contact form on my website, and just use that contact form. That's the best way to get a hold of me.
Brilliant.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I feel educated. I at least know that one of the fragrances I have still got on my shelf, Fahrenheit, is actually genuinely accepted as being a decent aftershave. So that's good to know.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you very much for coming on. That was really nice to speak to you. You can find us, all our stuff, just search Scottish Watches on YouTube and Instagram and all the rest of it. And join us again next time. So as you say, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Yeah.